Hello and welcome to Hockey Development Talk. Today I am back with officiating manager David Elworthy. Hello, David.
Afternoon, Gary. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good. You are the first person officially back twice. I know Matthew Weir has been on it three times, but that's been for different things with different groups, etc. This is the first time I've had a guest come back for a second time, but it's very timely, I think. Very timely. Going into the summer before the new season to discuss all things officiating. So, life treating you well?
Yeah, as you can imagine, busy, and that will continue to happen. But life is life. The great thing about our sport is that it's always evolving and changing and developing. So
Isn't
if
it?
it wasn't, I think we'd both be out of a job.
Thanks.
It's all right. There's a chirpy thought for a day.
Cheers indeed. So, just wanted to have a quick update. What have you been doing? We last spoke sort of February time, I think, when we launched the podcast, end of Jan, beginning of Feb. What's been going on?
So as we sort of highlighted in the first podcast, my role within England Hockey covers everything from grassroots and participation level of hockey, from junior hockey and the INTU model through to the international level. For some of the listeners, they may be aware that the National League is growing for the start of the 2019-20 season. We're adding an extra 20 teams per gender, which has a knock-on effect into umpiring and officiating world. So we'll just talk umpiring mainly. We have the organisation called the NPUA that services all the umpiring at a national level for us. They do not have the membership base or capability of dealing with an increase of 40 umpiring appointments a weekend. So we've been busy facilitating conversations between the NPUA and the five regional umpiring associations on how we could upskill our top regional umpires to take part in the new National League from next year. I'm talking about standardisation of gradings from across the regions. The regions have been fantastic in doing cross-regional assessments, and really thrashing through the, if you like, the elite domestic end on performance umpiring. So it's transparent, it's fair, it's equal, but we have the right number and the right standard of people to service the game at a national level. So it's been hard work, lots of work, lots of late meetings and evenings, but more importantly, the volunteers from a regional basis have been fantastic in this.
That's good.
Without them, we
That's
just
good.
couldn't do the work, which is fantastic. We've also spent some time just dealing with the technical officiating side of things, because obviously an extra 20 matches on the weekend means we'd need another 20 match officials. And so myself and the technical appointments panel have been busy burrowing away looking at availabilities and recruitment drives. And we have a series of recruitment roadshows going on in August and September around pre-season, where people, if they're interested in just learning more about what a match official does in the National League, they're welcome to turn up at a pre-season venue, spend a couple of hours giving it a go, learning more about the role, as we need to increase our pool by about 25 people for next season.
Just give me an example of that then. So I'm where I'm based now. If I was somewhere in the north, where would I go? How would that work?
So we'll use last year. So Leeds Hockey Club and Wakefield Hockey Club held, I think it was the Yorkshire Cup and the Yorkshire Super Cup. And the regional technical officiating coordinator, a guy called Mike Talbot, who you know very well, Mike arranged drop-in sessions for people to come along and give match officiating a go around those competitions. And we recruited six new match officials from there last year.
Okay. I'm not interested, by the way, just in case anyone was thinking, is Gary Johnson really going to be a match official? No, I'm
No,
not. No.
it's an important role, but it's very administrative, and it's also a challenging role because you have to keep people like Coach Gary Johnson in check during a game if he's getting frustrated with his players or the umpiring.
Never happens in my world. It's fine.
Obviously.
No. Okay, so that's been around then, more getting more people upskilled, I suppose is the word there, and getting them either into umpiring, officiating. You mentioned to me off air about a centralized IT system. Well, what have you been doing with that then, and what is
Yeah.
that?
So to help with this cohesion and slowly working towards everyone working together in umpiring world, we have been busy building a centralized IT system for appointing and managing the umpiring pathway, which will go live on the 1st of August with the MPUA and the regions. This all came about through consultation over the last 2 years with all of the umpiring associations across the country. So it was a thorough process. We have gone with a provider called Who's the Umpire,
Oh.
and they currently service officiating requirements and refereeing requirements in rugby, cricket, ice hockey. They've just broken into horse racing because of the appointing of all the judges and officials around a horse race. But they operate in 27 countries. So lots of time has been spent going down to Norwich, working with their developers as well as some website developers, so that we have quite an attractive proposal or proposition for people who are interested in coming to umpiring. They don't see a login page and then a load of database stuff.
Okay. Is that right? So, and that's in a way, that's pretty much most clubs will be able to utilize that, I assume, with the way that it's sort of set up.
Yeah, so the plan for phase two and three, which will be next season and the season after, is to develop the offer for county hockey umpiring associations and then clubs as well. Because a lot of clubs out there appoint more umpires on a weekend than some umpiring associations. And after doing the role at club level and appointing umpires, it can be a headache. And it's lots of WhatsApp groups, it's lots of emails. The whole aim of this system is effectively to reduce volunteer administration time.
That's
And
it.
the sooner we can find a way of making it work in a club scenario to either work alongside or maybe embed inside their current website and offer is something that we're looking at next year, hopefully for launch in 2020, 2021.
Wow. Anything else that you've been doing? Anything else that you've been doing?
Obviously, the Pro League is going great guns. Have you managed to get down to any of the matches?
Oh, don't stitch me up. No, I haven't. Not of yet. No. Thanks.
Also been responsible for the logistics of all the visiting officials and umpires. So there's been lots of weekends and airport runs and sorting out little problems just to allow the umpires to perform in a way that allows the players to show off their skills and make the product really attractive for hockey fans as well as new fans. So there's not really a lot of hard work in that. It's just a lot of managing people.
Right. Okay. And I mean, I suppose I'll add the question here. The people on the Pro League, umpires, are they now pretty much full-time umpires, or do they just do what they did before and we just have to fit it in around their jobs? How does that work?
They are 100% volunteer.
Wow.
So, if we use Dan Barstow from Wakefield as an example, Dan is umpiring in the Pro League. He is a primary school teacher. He's been able to do three matches this season, two of which were in half term, and the other one was on a Saturday night. And it sounds glamorous going over to Belgium or to Holland to do hockey. But Dan's world was land on a Friday night, umpire on a Saturday afternoon, fly home Saturday night, where he got a very small per diem just to pay for his own food and drink while he was over there, and no match fee.
Wow.
So when
Okay.
you compare that to some of the movers and shakers in club hockey who seem to be signing players left, right, and centre, and there's probably some money changing hands somewhere down the line. The umpires are still very much doing it for expenses only.
Okay, we'll move on before we get somebody telling me I shouldn't be asking those questions. So, right.
You can ask whatever you want.
No, I've got nothing to ask on that. New rules, I'm assuming you've been doing a bit of research, which we'll get on to later on, because that's the main bit of this podcast. So I know you've been doing some research around the new rules, and we'll get into some of that. Outside of that, has there been anything else that's gone on?
Yeah, so strangely, I always think that summertime is a really good opportunity for clubs to start developing their workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So Coaching World have obviously been going around planning a load of workshops, community of practices, sessional courses, all of those bits that you want to arm your workforce in your club for the following season.
Yep.
Despite my hardest of attempts, umpiring never works that way. So at the moment, we're actually busy trying to schedule courses for September and October.
Right.
Yeah. So last year, we did 143 courses across the season, of which over 90 of them were in September, October and January.
Okay. So, wow. I appreciate that July and August is summer holidays, people go away, but is there any other rationale about why that happens? Is the clubs that want to do it in April, May, June?
Yeah, I think it's the fact that people are driven to get a level one umpiring accreditation because of league regulations.
Yeah.
And at this time of year, lots of people are playing in summer hockey or mixed hockey leagues or six side stuff where the regulations are so relaxed, quite rightly, because this is about enjoying hockey and not really the hard-nosed competition end. So people just turn up and give umpiring a go.
Yeah.
And if anything, it's harder when you're trying to get 11 people out for a mixed game on an evening to try and get another 10 people out to develop their umpiring. Every club will just have a squad of 12 or 13 per team and they just sort it between themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's been a long season. If you think about the number of weekends you've been involved, Gary, this year with delivering coaches, these podcasts, coaching your own club team, you can over hockey.
Yeah, you can. So yeah, I get why people don't want to do it. But obviously, if there's a need and a club highlights that, so I've certainly in my patch, Yorkshire and Humber, been trying to say, look, if you know there's a need and you need these people from start of September because you're doing pre-season and stuff like that to get a course in. 6 hours, maybe 2-3 hours in an evening, or because I learned that when we did our last podcast that it doesn't have to be just a 6 hour day, we could have two evenings or a whole day. Then why don't we get the course done, and then in the start of September when these matches are going on, or if you can do it over the summer, great, but start of September, all you've got to do then is get out there and get straight back into it. That would have been useful, but I appreciate that it's a busy period, but
I do sympathize as well, because clubs normally have their AGMs around this time of year.
Yeah.
And a lot of clubs have changing volunteers in that committee level.
Mm-hmm.
And umpire liaison officers or umpire development officers or even club umpire developer officers, club development officers full stop.
Yeah.
Lots of those come into post around this time. It takes people a month to really get to grips with what they would like to do over the 12 months.
Yeah.
And then the planning really starts for people now moving into next year. So I think we'll always service the requests as they come in. But feasibly and realistically, on a club chairman's radar, at the moment, we're talking about securing where we're playing hockey next year. We're talking about trying to secure coaches. We're trying to secure sponsorship for the teams, and more importantly, we're building ourselves up for back to hockey and other ways to grow our club.
Yeah.
And you would rather get those bits in place, because you can get an umpiring course set up in 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. All of the other just remind me we want this to happen. We've listened again to this. We think, do you know what, I'm going to go to my club and say, let's get an umpire workshop or something on. Level one, we can be done one day or two evenings at 3 hours or two afternoons if people really want to do it in afternoons or over a weekend like that. But they just fill out a form and they send it to umpiring@englandhockey.co.uk. Done?
Perfect. Done.
And they can host it at their own venue where You'll pay for the pitch. You'll do all of that. So.
Yeah, we source the tutor, we do the marketing, we take all the bookings online. With the help of the Hockey Hub, if a club wanted to pay for a number of their members to go on,
Yeah.
can now do that as well, which is
That's a
really.
change, isn't it? Because we didn't have that before. So.
Oh, that's a development that we've made through the Hockey Hub to make life easier.
Yeah. Okay.
So the booking process is now held on the Hockey Hub, where you would also do your online rules test or access some of the other development material that people can look at for their own umpiring.
What's the online rules test? Just quickly, just don't, I don't want to be turned too long on this. What's the online rule test?
So we have copied word for word the rules of hockey as they are in 2017.
How many do I have to get right to pass?
You have to get 100% multiple choice, Gary. But the nice thing is that where we've been able to add some user ability and be able to see what the rule means,
Yeah.
if you go to rule 9.3, which is a player cannot interfere with another player's clothing, body, or stick, there are some short videos beneath that rule to show what that rule means
Right.
and
Is
how to penalize it.
rule 9.3 really that?
Yeah.
You cake.
Yeah, I know. It's the only one I remember word for word because it's dead easy to quote.
Geek.
Or
Right.
the number of times people shout at me saying, "What's that for?" You just shout 9.3 and you get away with it.
Okay, so right, that's easy then, isn't it? Well, it's not easy. I wouldn't get 100%. I got 100% on the pitch right when I was playing, but I definitely wouldn't get 100% on
I
the
would
rule
argue
change.
that point after playing and umpiring with you, Gary.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, let's get into the nuts and bolts of it here. Rule changes. This is what people want to know. I know that you've been doing a lot of research on it. Let's go back. FIH, was it January, December, January, something like that? Launched these new rule changes that they were bringing into the game.
Yeah, so 2 days after the Men's World Cup in Bhubaneswar, so
Yes.
about the 17th of December.
Okay, well, the significant changes were match timings to be quarters to mirror the international game, removal of player with goalkeeper privileges, and amendments to attacking and defending free hits within the 23. There were other bits, but they were the three biggest things. Talk us through what's happening with the rule changes, how's it going to affect our game?
So let's take quarters on head on.
Right.
I sit here as a member of staff from England Hockey saying I'm not comfortable with what 4 quarters of 15 minutes could mean for our clubs. The reason I say that is because the rules have been written so that it matches what you see on a TV when you watch international hockey. Which means that even though you have 4 quarters of 15 minutes, you stop the clock whenever a penalty corner is awarded, and you stop the clock when a goal is being scored.
Okay.
In our country, and not just ours, in other countries across Europe where I've spoken to their equivalents of me, it's not uncommon for a pitch to have four, five, six, seven matches on there in a day. If I use my girlfriend's club of Boots Hockey Club as a perfect example, they use one pitch. Their first game is at 9 o'clock in the morning. Their last game should start at 4:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I say the word should because I guarantee that the ladies' team that should start at 9 in the morning doesn't start exactly at 9. It's normally 5 or 10 past, which then puts everything else late.
Yeah.
Then throughout the course of a day with the current timings, with a head injury here or there, or lots of cards because the men's first team are playing at home, or whatever the reason, the 4:30 match normally starts at around 5 to 5.
Yeah.
The biggest variable that we cannot control with quarters is the number of penalty corners given in the game. So let's get really geeky, Gary, and this will blow your mind with geekiness. I sat down with Loughborough students and I worked with Danny Crowther, their videographer. And we went through each match in the first half of their National League Ladies campaign last year. In those games, I counted the number of corners there were per team, the total amount of stoppage time that we had for each corner, the total amount of stoppage time for each goal and the average length of time it took their girls or their opposition players to get set up for a penalty corner. It worked out that there was an average of 7 corners a game. Each corner took, on average, 48 seconds to set up.
Okay.
If we were to play the FIH rules as they are quoted, mm-hmm. 4 quarters of 15 with stopping clocks, the overall running time of a game, instead of it being 75 minutes, including the 5-minute half time, would turn into 81 and a half minutes, because that would involve a 2-minute quarter break between 1 and 2, 5 minutes half time, 2 minutes between 3 and 4. That just puts more pressure on our pitches. It also makes it even harder for our umpires. And it's hard enough trying to get some people to come and umpire in our clubs anyway. If you now tell them they have to time 2-minute green cards, they have to time 5-minute yellow cards, they have to remember to stop the clock when they award a penalty corner, and they have to remember to start the clock again when it starts, and you tell them that they have to stop the clock for a goal and restart it there, the amount of error that could come in could be catastrophic in a game. And the other element of this is that me and you are quite old people in terms of playing hockey nowadays, mate. We've both played for 25 plus years. We're so used to paying a match fee for 70 minutes worth of hockey that if I was critical and be told by a club that I'm now only going to be playing 60 minutes worth of hockey in a game, I'd want a 13% reduction in my match fee.
So what are we going to do about this? Are we enforcing it, not enforcing it? How's it going to work?
So within line with what the FIH produce in their rule books, we are able to ask for an exemption from certain rules. The challenge that we have at the moment is that we are discussing this exemption with the FIH, because if we turn around and say we want to play a different format of the game, the knock-on effect to some of the other rules, where the wording is about quarters and stopping the time, means that potentially we are making so many changes to the rules of hockey that all of a sudden, anyone playing our game, your insurance policy is not valid. We can make that decision lightly, and the conversations between us and the FIH have been going on since January. We are going to come to a conclusion, but I can't tell you when, but I know for sure that it has to be before the 1st of September.
Okay, right. Well, that'll hopefully help some listeners that have been asking me questions. That's why you're on. So I don't know what's going on with rule changes. Now I know one little bit. So there's no final decision on match timings around quarters and stuff like that, but it's in discussion. You've been in discussion since January, and we get now that there is a bit of an issue with regards to, if we move to quarters, then obviously we've got the minutes to consider, and we've got everything else, and the issues it will cause with pitches. But also, if we don't, we've obviously then making up our own rules, and we need to have them rectified or ratified or whatever we want to call them. So,
but then let's talk openly about this. Holland, Belgium, Germany have all said that they will move to quarters, but they're going to be playing 17 and a half minute quarters with no stopping of the time for penalty corners or goals. That could be an option for us,
right,
if the FIH allow it.
How have they they're asking you the right question here. How have they allowed it for them to do it? And then, so.
Good question. Belgium have just turned around and said we're doing it tough, and they're only doing it in their equivalent of our National League Prem. The rest of the domestic game of Belgium is staying at 2x35. Okay. Germany and Holland have just gone, we're just going to do this, and who cares?
Right.
And I wish I had that attitude at times. It would make my life so much easier. But that's the only sticking point, because if we talk through the other main changes, if you want to, I'm happy to explain what it means.
Yes, please.
The rest of them are fairly straightforward.
Yep.
So player with goalkeeping privileges, or in my language, kicking back.
Yeah.
Gone. It's a mandatory experiment to take them out of the game.
Right.
What now happens then?
What now happens?
Well, you either play with 10 outfield players and a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And you can sub a goalkeeper for a goalkeeper who's fully kitted. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Or just play with 11 outfielders.
Okay. So if it hits a foot in a D, no matter whether it's this person that had a bib on before and stuff like that, that's now gone.
Correct. So what it does mean, and there's a couple of knock-on bits for that, is that if you concede a penalty corner and you've got no goalkeeper on the pitch,
mm-hmm.
you can't sub on a goalkeeper, so you have to defend it with 5 outfielders. Everyone can wear masks, everyone can wear the gloves and the knee pads and everything else, but no one's allowed to kick the ball or use their body to stop the ball.
Well,
if it's a penalty stroke, if you have a goalkeeper who's kitted up, you can sub them on for the stroke.
Right.
If you don't, they can only wear the same protective kit as you allow for a penalty corner. And they cannot use their body still.
I was about to ask that.
But let's be honest. I know that you've been around Lincolnshire today visiting some of the clubs that I know.
Mm-hmm.
Can't imagine Louth second team playing with 11 outfielders all game.
No.
But I also can't imagine them pulling off a goalkeeper to have an extra outfielder. So this rule is really going to just affect the teams, I think, top of county level going into the regional level.
Maybe.
But for the club teams, unless you don't have a goalkeeper on a day, which could happen, most will play with a goalkeeper.
Okay. Fine. And then the amendments to the attacking free hits and defensive free hits within the 23.
Yeah, let's do the simple one. If you're defending, Gary.
No, thanks.
In the circle. Now, follow me through on this. And you're in possession of the ball in your circle, and I come in and stick tackle you.
Yeah.
I will be penalised with a free hit. So it's a defensive free hit.
Yeah.
If that defensive free hit has been awarded inside your circle,
mm-hmm.
if you wanted to, you could pick the ball up, throw it to the other side of the circle, and take the free hit from there. Really? Because the balling has changed, so it matches indoor hockey. If the free hit has been given to the defence inside their own circle, they can take the free hit anywhere in their circle. If they want to bring it up to the 16 or the 9.1 metre, and then they can do, but it has to be in line with where the foul was conceded. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's good. Cool. That's good. Yeah. I wonder what people think on that. I'd like to hear what people think on that rule. That's okay. And then what about the other way then? Attacking
free
hits.
For people who are slightly older than us.
Yep.
Used to play it. Attacking free hits. If it's inside 5 meters of the circle.
Yeah.
If you've conceded the foul, for the last 2 years, you've been able to stand inside the circle and not interfere with play until the ball has gone 5.
Yeah.
This is now trickier, and this is now a little bit odd, but you can't do it anymore.
Meaning?
You have to be 5 meters if you're standing inside the circle.
Right.
The only time you don't have to retreat the 5 is if the attacker who wins the free hit takes a quick self-pass. We then play that like you would do any other self-pass anywhere else on the pitch. If you're in the 5, leave them, don't touch them, let them go 5s, then get involved.
Mm.
The idea is it's just to speed up or clean up those areas. So
that's hard to manage that. I will be honest with you. If I was still playing, I would try and manipulate that quite a lot.
So if we use an example of GB Germany ladies on Friday.
Yeah.
attacking free hit was given and the ball just got out of the attacker's control and ran off the back of the pitch.
Yeah.
There is a video clip, which I'm trying to source from our video team, where the umpire just walks in and just tells everyone to get 5 metres just to proactively manage that situation.
Okay.
The best thing in these bits is for the umpires just to get on the offensive in terms of getting in there early.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the more that we use our voice, the more we explain to players, especially early in the season, what we need to do and why we need to do it, mm-hmm. that will help educate the players.
Because if they're not five, you would just... Would you just not try and make that happen so then you won a short corner?
Yeah, okay, good.
I'm just thinking what I would try and do.
I think the coaching, yeah. the player coaching me
yeah.
would want to educate my players enough. Yeah, yeah. So in this situation, early in the season, they probably hold the ball a bit longer than they would do around the circle
yeah,
to
yeah.
try and entice a defender who hasn't dropped five to come and make a challenge.
Yeah.
But that's me also being the cynical player coach that I used to be.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not against the rules. It's no, in the rules.
No, that's good.
There's one other really, really silly one that you should be aware. Historically, at the end of a half or a full time, if a penalty corner has been awarded, the penalty corner is over when it leaves the circle for the yeah. second time.
Yeah.
That's not the case anymore. The ball has to travel five or end up in a scenario that is not a bully.
Okay. So it has to go outside the dots, basically.
So smash it outside the dots.
Yeah.
Or accidentally give away a long corner. You know, one of those block tackles yeah. where the ball just happens to go off the back line because of the way you've made the tackle.
Yeah.
Sorry, umps, I've done the best I can to keep that on, promise.
Okay, well, that's really interesting for me. You know, I know that people have been asking about rule changes. Can we update them where they're at? Hopefully this gives them a little bit of information. Is there anything else that we need to know about in the umpiring world or not?
I would say that from my perspective, the biggest thing, just to get across to all the listeners, and after some of the feedback we both got from the first one,
yeah,
that we do work hard on this. And for most of the time, umpires do try their best, and occasionally they do fluff it up.
Yeah.
And as long as the players and the umpires work together with that empathy and respect, then actually it doesn't really matter if they make a mistake. As long as they don't drop an absolute clanger that costs you the game, and it makes them want to get better and come back and do your games again. Mm-hmm. So in a way, you almost have to be polite as a player to get the umpires in the first place, but work with them. And the biggest message that we've been sending through our National Young Umpiring Panel through to the guys who are going over to EHF and FIH tournaments for the first time this summer is work with the players. Because if you work with them, you'll get a better game for everyone, which is what we all want.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, that's been fascinating. Once again, thank you for coming on, giving us an update on the rules. Hopefully this will now make a few of my listeners who have been direct messaging me about rules that I had absolutely no idea what was going on with. Hopefully you've now updated them and they're a happy bunch.
Yeah, so. And for those who are still worried about the rule changes, please bear with us. We yeah. have to work through this process
yeah.
just for the right decision for our game. But when we do make the decision, there will be a handy crib sheet of what it means and what you can and can't do with them. And we will also be furnishing our umpiring associations to go locally with some video clips so that you can actually see the new rules in action.
Cool. Do you want to just update people? Twitter, it's at something David Elworthy, isn't it? Or something like that.
That's my personal one. Yeah, at David Elworthy. Or you've got the at EH Umpiring Twitter account.
Yeah.
We're not adventurous enough in umpiring world for Instagram or tweeting. Tweeting's pretty much our lot, really.
Yeah.
But any inquiries can come to me at England Hockey. So it's just my name at englandhockey.co.uk yeah. or the umpiring inbox, which is umpiring. @englandhockey.co.uk.
Okay. Thanks again. Much appreciated, David. Really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thanks, Gary.